delivers a powerful and compelling sound that summons the spirits. Tickets for La Dame Blanche can be found at the Cedar Cultural Center website. Visit thecedar.org for more details.
KFAI is excited to welcome legendary speed metal heathens Exciter Monday, July 29th at the Turf Club in St. Paul. With support from Midnight, Hellwitch, and Wraith, this show is guaranteed to unleash the Iron Dogs. Tickets for Exciter, Midnight, Hellwitch, and Wraith are available now at First Avenue's website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Friends, are you tired of listening to the same old thing? Then try listening to KFAI.
But what if I already listen to KFAI?
Friends, are you tired of not having anyone to talk with about the cool stuff you hear on KFAI? Then get your friends to listen too.
But what if I don't have any friends?
Friends, are you tired of not having any friends? Then try KFAI's Discord page.
KFAI's Discord page?
That's right. Log in through the link at KFAI.org. Chat with KFAI hosts in real time. Meet other KFAI listeners. Be friendly. Become popular. It's all up to you, because KFAI is where communities, even online communities, grow.
I'm spreading my beautiful wings!
As many of you know, our co-founder and co-host, Donald Eubanks, passed away in March. He was our friend, mentor, and family member. As we take some time to heal, we are replaying some of his favorite episodes and topics. Today, we are sharing our conversation with Red Lake legal counsel Joe Plummer from November 2023.
Well, this is Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and Associated Dendros Group.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Anthony Galloway, partner at the Dendros Group and pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
And Luz Marie Freyas could not join us this evening, but we do have a special guest with us, and I would like our special guest to introduce himself at this time.
Okay. My name is Joe Plummer. I serve as the general legal counsel for the Red Lake Band of Chippewa. I'm a Leech Lake tribal member.
Well, welcome, Joe Anine. And so we have been doing a series of podcasts this summer where we've been going over legislation that was passed. And this podcast will be the last one of that series. And so in this podcast, we're going to talk about recreational cannabis. If everyone remembers, that was a big change in Minnesota law, and I think it happened back in May. And sales started August 1st, and one of the first places to open and legally sell marijuana was the Red Lake Band of Ojibwe Indians. And so, Mr. Plummer, so, you know, one of the questions that I wanted to ask about that was, how was Red Lake ready to open up a store August 1st when the law just passed in May?
Well, Don, the tribe had earlier legalized medical cannabis. And so we did our homework ahead of time. We got a map of where all of the licensed medical patients lived. And there are a lot of them up around our area. So the tribal council decided that they were going to develop a grow operation. And so we got our grow operation going probably 3 years ago. You know, we worked out all the bugs, you know, got top-notch equipment, you know, from Canada, actually, and have a really nice, secure grow facility. So we trained all of our growers and all of our the sellers at the dispensary who were focused at that time on only medical, to get them all comfortable with it and, you know, get them used to the process and all of the different protocols that we needed to have in place to make sure that we had a safe product. You know, we had to have, of course, we have to have it tested and everything, make sure, not so much, you know, for the potency, but, you know, for the presence of molds and heavy metals and other contaminants. And so we were able to put together a real good checklist, you know, of every time of all of our grows to make sure that it satisfied all those quality control type of concerns. And then, you know, we had just been doing that for almost 3 years when the state legislation passed. And, you know, we actually did have a hand in fashioning, you know, that state legislation. We're very fortunate, you know, to be able to have a very good rapport with a lot of the legislators who had actually sponsored this. And, you know, this had been going on for probably 3 years ahead of time and got a lot of tribal friendly provisions into that legislation. And it helps all the tribes, to tell you the truth.
You know, and thank you for that explanation, because, you know, those of us who weren't familiar with that background, you know, I was just always wondering how Red Lake was so prepared and ready to go on August 1st, you know, while the rest of us are still scrambling to, I think, make changes to our constitutions in order to be up and running. But that, you know, that's a fantastic explanation with that background. And it's nice to know that the tribes also had some involvement with the creation of that legislation. Because, yeah, you know, our history with the state of Minnesota is on and off when it comes to those type of things.
Yeah.
So that's very encouraging. And so I was just going to kind of read the bullet points from the law that was passed. And so the law kind of created more than a dozen types of licenses for growing, selling, transporting, and testing cannabis. It created an Office of Cannabis Management to regulate cannabis and take enforcement actions.
Okay, so here's another kind of interesting piece. All of those different, there's 12, between 12 and 15 different types of licenses in there, Don. Those only apply to the non-native off-reservation places. One of the things that we really pushed for in the legislation is vertical integration. You know, we wanted to be vertically integrated because that's the way we had developed ourselves. And what that means is from seed to sale. You know, we go ahead, you know, we have the whole facilities, the growth facilities. We grow everything from a seed, we process it, we package it, and we sell it. We want to have that vertical integration. You know, we want to be in control of it, same way we have been for the past few years. And so that was included in there. Tribes are allowed to vertically integrate, and they're allowed to be accepted out of all of those 12 to 15 different licenses. And just for the listeners' background, all of those licenses kind of fall into three categories. One is the grower manufacturer, another one is the wholesaler, and the other one is the retailer. So we wanted to have all of them, and that's something that all the legislators kind of accommodated us with.
That's fantastic, Joe. And I'm going to complicate this a little bit more.
Okay.
What's just, you know, the insider intersections that happen often between tribes and state.
Yeah.
But that was going to be a question I was going to ask, because Red Lake is unique,
yeah,
in the fact that they are the one tribe in the state of Minnesota that did not agree to abide by Public Law 280.
Yeah.
Hold on. What is that public law, Don, for our listeners who don't know?
Public Law 280, essentially, where states were created around the reservations. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Because the reservations existed before the state of Minnesota did. But after the state of Minnesota was established, legal jurisdiction fell to the federal government, because that's where our treaties existed throughout the United States. So it was every state that had reservations within their borders. And a compromise is they came up with this Public Law 280 that allowed the states to have civil and criminal jurisdiction, if I'm correct. Correct me, yeah, if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So, but the key, however, where the states had to agree to this, I'm a little blurry on when Public Law 280 was instituted.
1953.
So it was after the creation of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe.
Yeah.
And so the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe is comprised of six Ojibwe reservations in Minnesota. They agreed to Public Law 280. Red Lake stood alone and did not agree to that agreement. So the state has no jurisdiction whatsoever over Red Lake.
You know, Don, let me just dovetail with something. You know, back in 1889, you know, when the United States was trying to push allotment on all the tribes, then again, you know, the Red Lake chiefs said, no way, you know, you're not going to do it. You're not going to allot up here. So what the chiefs did, just to make their intent clear, because they had been hoodwinked in the past, they had a map. You know, a Rand McNally map, and they literally drew on the map, you know, showing this is what we meant. This is something that illustrates it. Okay. So, and it included around both upper and lower Red Lakes. In between Red Lake and Washington, D.C., that map got substituted. And you see that one third of the upper lake, you know, that's cut off. See, that's how that happened.
How it got cut off?
Yes. Okay, so you probably heard, you know, that we're pursuing that right now. State legislators has been very supportive of us, and they're going to be sponsoring legislation to return to Red Lake all of those lands around the upper lake that are state, in the hands of the state. And over half of the lands around that part of the upper lake are in state hands.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of below the line information that I need to have. We keep finding that even if we touch a little thing, there's so little knowledge that folks have tried to omit from Native experience, that we need this backstory just to have the little bit. We know that pattern keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to have not only an Indigenous person with us, but someone who's a legal expert. You know, the two experiences I had as Commissioner of Health and Human Services were tremendous learning opportunities for me. Yeah. And to learn what really happened as a result of our treaties and the relationships we had and didn't have with federal, state, and county entities was a tremendous learning experience.
Oh, yeah.
And very complicated. But, you know, so I know we were excited. Well, just like everyone else, when Red Lake opened their store on August 1st, and you know, because it was a big news story. I mean, they were showing lines outside the store in Red Lake, and at least for a week. You know how the news cycle is. I think it was about a week, and then it faded away.
Yeah. But you know what, Don? You know, we didn't have to spend any money on advertising.
None whatsoever.
No.
It was all taken care of for you. I think every major network and every local news network covered that.
Yeah, they did.
And it was fantastic.
This is Counter Stories. You're listening to a special rerun of our conversation with Red Lake Legal Counsel Joe Plummer from November 2023. I'm Lee Lee with co-hosts Anthony Galloway and the late Donald Eubanks. This show is supported by Ampers and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
You know, I've got two wonderings. One of them, and again, my learning curve is exposed here, but I'm gonna do it because it's with family. So, so I know that there's a challenge, or there's some kind of issue where, as tribes, you don't have taxing authority the same way the state does. And so other entities make up kind of fund the services that happen. And I'm wondering, kind of similar to how casinos function in that role, is this in the similar vein?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very similar. These net profits that I mentioned, you know, that are coming over, Anthony, you know, they fund, you know, they pick up the slack that the feds don't provide, you know. And you've raised a really interesting point of this new legislation. But again, you know, we were fortunate to be able to influence this part, and that is no taxation for any tribe-to-tribe commerce. And so you know, when the regular systems open up licensed by the state, they're going to be looking at least 20% tax, you know, 10% gross receipts, and then 8% sales, and then on top of that, wherever, whatever the local tax is, you know, if it's in Minneapolis or St. Paul, they'll have their own local tax on it. So, you know, it's going to exceed 20%. So right out of the chute, we're saving. We got a 20% advantage. So, you know, we're doing things right now that are just between tribes, tribe-to-tribe commerce. And so we know that the Mille Lacs, Don, is setting up a big grow operation right now. But our plans are to dovetail, because what Mille Lacs plans on doing is to the processing, you know, the value-added products, you know, like the gummies. A lot of people don't like to smoke. Most people don't. So they like the oils, and they like the pills, and they like the gummies. Well, that's what Mille Lacs is going to focus on, you know, removing, you know, all the cannabinoids and making these value-added products. And so we're gonna do business with them.
When the law was kind of coming together, you know, I think there are a lot of other there were a lot of non-Indigenous folks who were really excited about this, saying like, "Oh, I'm going to start my own thing," or you know, and that seemed to be a little difficult. One of the things the law was supposed to be doing was creating grants to assist individuals into entering the cannabis market. I don't know if you've seen that outside of the tribal network at all.
Well, we read the news about that IRRRB, and we were disappointed with it.
Tell me what IRRRB is.
Oh, it's Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. They gave $20 million forgivable loans to this outfit over, and I think it's going to be in Grand Rapids. It was that old, used to be a Potlatch OSB board plant, you know, that Ainsworth, the Canadian company, bought, then shut it down. They want to use that property for a grow operation. This is not a local business, really? Either, Don. This is from Missouri, of all places.
I actively listened to the debate about it, and medical marijuana, I don't think I had as much of a reaction, but you know, I need to be open on this, because I'm been sober now 33 years. And one of my previous positions, when I left Mille Lacs the first time, I became director of the chemical health division for the state of Minnesota. So I oversaw the state's treatment and prevention system for 7 years. So that side of me still has a reaction to legalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we know that in our community that drugs, not just marijuana, but drugs have been fueling such social unrest on our reservations through gang involvement, and it just goes on and on and on. And so I'm always a little concerned about the backside of recreational cannabis. I know that it's expunging records, and rightfully so, for, you know, because the war on drugs was only directed against African Americans and us.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, when I was director, I could see it. I could see the stats day in and day out. You know, how do we discuss that? How do we work our way through those kind of things?
Well, you know, Don, we have a little sheet that we give out to all the customers that have all of these things on it. Don't try it. Don't possess this amount if you're going off the reservation. Just all of it. It's just a summary of all of the laws that people need to be aware of. And me, I'm with you. You know, I got 35 years of sobriety, and
congratulations.
Thanks. And so I'm not I don't use or anything, drugs or alcohol or anything.
This is Counter Stories. You're listening to a special rerun of our conversation with Red Lake Legal Counsel Joe Plummer from November 2023. I'm Lee Lee with co-hosts Anthony Galloway and the late Donald Eubanks. This show is supported by Ampers and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For a full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. For people in general, there was always the stigma of like, oh, doing weed makes you so bad, you're so terrible, whatever, whatever. And now all of a sudden it's cool and it's fun and everybody wants to do it. Right. There's a little bit of that perspective as well, like that I'm seeing. Before it was like, oh, you're such a pothead, blah, blah, blah. And then every now and then, hey, can you get me some weed because I want to try it? Or, you know, we're doing a girls weekend. Can you get me a joint? This, that. And then it's always very hush hush. And all of a sudden now it's like, oh, we do it too. It's cool. Now we all do it. I mean, there's a little bit of a change in our society, in the state. Once this passed, it was like, oh, I'm no longer calling you a druggie. I'm no longer calling you a pothead, because now we all kind of do it, or we can, we have the opportunity to do it. And it's cool now. It reminds me of back of like when I was in school and people in elementary school would try cigarettes and they're like, it's cool. It's cool. You know, people who smoke are cool because it's legal. And it was like, oh, before it was legal, it was so, you know, you were a druggie, you were a pothead, you were, you know, a burnout, blah, blah, and all this stuff just because you partake every now and then. And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, that's changed. I don't know if you've seen it on the reservation.
It's changed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it here because like even just talking to cousins and distant relatives about it, they're always like, let's drive up to Red Lake. And like, even getting this perspective that like Red Lake is where the druggies are. Like Red Lake is where, you know, like getting this perspective. And I'm like, just because they were quick on the ball to get, you know, open their shop doesn't mean they're a bunch of potheads that run Red Lake, you know?
Oh no, it's not. And you know, we all have receptors in our brain and things, yeah, where the cannabis works as a medicine. People, you know, when they get, you know, elderly age and stuff, they have trouble sleeping and stuff. Believe me, you know, that works for many people. You know, just to, not to smoke, but take a little gummy and chew it, and boy, you get a good night's sleep. You know, people really appreciate. You know,
that has been the conversation amongst me, my generation in particular, and my elders in my community, in that, you know, marijuana becomes what it is because of a stereotypical stigma that was put on there that had nothing to do with it, quote unquote, being nefarious at all. And in fact, if you're going to smoke, drink, or use cannabis, cannabis is the thing that's not going to kill you in the way that cigarettes and alcohol will, you know. And so I think one of the things I think is a benefit to this, and this is one of the arguments that we've been having, is that when we had stigmatized this thing that is less deadly than many of the other legal things that we have on the market, now we can actually talk about it, right? So I asked the question, it's the difference between not saying anything about it and then not getting all this education, or actually having an opportunity to get some of the education about what it really is and what it really does, and when and when you shouldn't use it, right? If it's in the light, we can actually have an approach. When it's in the dark, there's nothing you can do about it. And which one would you rather have? That usually kind of tips the conversation.
Well, you know, along those lines, Anthony, you know, just because it, you know, it's legalized at the tribe level and off the reservation too, it doesn't mean that people can be irresponsible in their
employment.
You know, we have the same, you know, levels that we had before, you know, policies of, you know, you can't be under the influence of anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, because it's so new, we're all going to be working our way through and finding the right balance, you know. And I think that we project that people will use it responsibly. You know, we joke around. People around here, you're kind of goofy acting all the time, and you know, we talk about, heck, you know, you never see anybody getting a speeding ticket when they're high on marijuana.
That reminds me of Cheech and Chong. Yeah. Them boys would just pull over and roll their windows up, right?
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, I think those kind of discussions, and it might be generational, you know, Joe, because I think you and I, who both have over, you know, 30 years of sobriety.
Yep.
You know, we grew up in that time period where marijuana was stigmatized. I mean, I remember Reefer Madness.
Oh, yeah.
The movie Reefer Madness. Remember that?
Right from the 50s, huh? Yeah, I remember.
Stupid movie. But I'm just saying, you know, so we were stigmatized with marijuana.
Yeah.
And it's hard to work your way through that, to debunk that, put all that to the side.
That was one of the things that came through it too. You know, I know somebody who works at some of the breweries who are brewing some of those seltzer things, and they spent a lot of time in their rollout just putting those warnings in there to say, hey, you got to give this a minute. Here's the expected time frame. But again, that's part of the learning and education. And we're still, as far as I know, in terms of medical science, zero overdose deaths on cannabis. So I have lost people to alcoholism. I have lost people to lung cancer. I have lost people to all these other illicit drugs. Marijuana just ain't one of the things that I go, oh, I lost this person to marijuana. Now, again, you got to still study the research, right? Because we are seeing links to anxiety and depression for certain folks and populations. We don't know, because it's been in the dark for so long, we don't have the study and the research around long-term effect. And all of those things are important, but we definitely know the long-term effects of cigarettes and alcohol.
My sisters, they were visiting our friend out in Colorado, and he provided some chocolates and some gummies, and they divided it up in like 2 milligram pieces. And so they all did it together in a hotel room with him being completely sober, watching them. So if people are like concerned about what their reaction is going to be, like, that was just a super responsible way, I felt, for them to be able to explore like what they can handle.
Let me say, just as a disclaimer, given our recent sharings, we are not medical professionals. We are just sharing our experiences and our knowledge. Please consult your own doctors and all those kinds of things. Let me just say that so Flea doesn't have to edit that in later.
Thank you.
You know, one of the wonderings I have, though, you know, because as we destigmatize we decriminalize, right, we have to continue to do that work, not just with our language, but for all the folks who have been hurt. You know how many people who... all they were in jail for, right, was a weed charge, and otherwise had no other, you know, criminal inclination, no other issues in their entire lives. But they get, this was used as an excuse to lock folks up, to get the numbers and feel like you're doing good on crime. And so how do we restore, you know, what are the conversations about restoring the damage that this stereotype has done? Because that's really what this is. The only reason it's illegal is because of stereotypes that white dominant culture tried to make against folks by calling it something that, quote unquote, sounded Spanish, in, you know, because of their that prejudice.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, Anthony, the legislation that we're talking about includes, you know, the mandatory expungement for the lower level. But there's a good argument that could be made, because there's already an expungement process on the books in Minnesota anyway. But even though it's not a mandatory expungement for the higher level ones with the, you know, higher volumes, you know, of the product that got the folks convicted earlier, there's a good argument that could be made for a permissive expungement in those circumstances also.
I know we started talking about recreational cannabis, and I think that was a very great discussion. I think Red Lake has positioned himself very well, and I think I look forward to Indian Country being able to come to Red Lake for that expertise and knowledge. The tribes have to keep their wherewithal about them, and or because there's outside entities that would like to swoop in and take advantage of us, much like they did when they negotiated the treaties with us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's always an ulterior motive about those treaties that we were never aware of back then when we signed them. Those same efforts are happening here, and not only to tribes. And so, you know, so there have been mistakes along the way on the state side, and we hope that those things improve. And improve for all of us here in the state of Minnesota. This has been Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate of Dendros Group.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
And I'm Anthony Galloway, partner at the Dendros Group and pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
And Joel?
Joe Plummer, legal counsel for the Red Lake Band of Chippewa.
This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.